Thank you for the show, and thank you for tuning in.
Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm Dab Stedman, your host, and our special guest today is Ender Black. Ender is a 16-year-old student who some of you already know from his segment on the Rose City Native radio program here called Roar of the Earth. Ender brings to us this morning the knowledge and wisdom of the ancients as he talks and sings about animals from a Native American perspective. Good morning, Ender, and welcome.
Hi.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
All right, glad you could be here. Ender, unlike most students your age, you've never attended a public school, but have had a very special kind of education instead. By your own words, you were raised completely immersed in Native American spirituality, and you've been learning all aspects of ancient knowledge in your studies since your childhood. Exactly what is ancient knowledge, and how have you been learning this?
Well, that's a tough question. First I have to say that the way I was introduced to what I call Native American, spirituality, was through my dad and through direct experience, like going to forests with him when I was little and connecting to nature and reading a lot about whatever is written about the old ways of connecting to nature and accepting animals, big and small, as equal beings, which is like a major thing because I don't really know anyone that thinks these things.
And you say your father was your primary teacher. Who did he learn from then?
Yeah, he learned from his dad. So it's like a long line of, you would call, teachers, I think the term, there's some people use the term shaman, and some other people use the term teacher or just a holder of the knowledge, which is, that's basically what he was, what he gave me, what I'm supposed to do here, yeah.
So you feel that in a sense that you have a particular mission in life that was handed to you by your father?
Well, I think at first, because he, the way he talked to me used to be like really a lot of grand words. And I think when I was really young, I really thought that I had like a special mission or something. But I really don't think that anymore. I think, actually, I'm not sure exactly what it is that I'm supposed to do. So I have no clue.
Yeah, well, you're only 16. I'm a lot older than that, and I still don't have a clue, so don't feel bad. Okay.
I do know something, though. I do know that a lot of people have, a lot of people are doing wonderful things. And it's like we all have the same mission. We all have one mission.
And what would that mission be?
The mission would be to save ourselves, save the world.
All right.
And it's just like no one can actually do it. Because no one has superpowers, but everyone does like a little part. And that's what I'm starting to understand now.
What your particular part in attaining that goal, that lofty goal would be.
That's what I have to figure out, if it's writing. I like writing and I like music and I'm pretty good at writing. And I guess music a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, back to the ancient teachings that you've been learning from your father.
Yeah.
What do the ancient teachings say about animals and our rightful relationship with them?
Many things. I think the main thing that ancient teachings say about animals and humans is that we're all beings of the same quality and the same caliber, and that's very important. I think in traditional Native American culture, like what you read on the internet and what you read, they use the term, some tribes use the term brothers and sisters for mm-hmm. animals, mm-hmm. which is, you know, most people wouldn't understand. Like I don't even use those terms myself for animals, but some tribes actually do. They call, you know, the brother wolf and the sister owl, for example. I think that's an example of how that's the relationship between human and animals, and that's how I believe it to be. Yeah, like we have hands, we have brains, and we can make things. But it doesn't really make us better than other animals.
So on a spiritual level, that animals and people are equal, would you say?
Yeah. The thing is that the term spiritual is really hard to describe. I'm starting to not like that word anymore because people misinterpret it. They think about religions or organized religions, and it's just really confusing stuff that I don't really find interesting. But I think in terms of energy and consciousness, those are terms that are more apt to describe animals and humans and the way we're talking about them, I think.
Okay. The famous Teton Sioux chief Sitting Bull once said, "We yield to our animal neighbors the same rights as ourselves to inhabit the land." Do animals have this right or any other rights from the perspective of the ancient teachings?
Yes. Yes, no question. I'm absolutely sure about that. Animals have a place, and it's a place that is utterly important. No question, animals have the right. The planet needs animals. The planet, like if you see it from a scientific way, like you don't think about values or ethics or nothing like that. What we're talking about, you just think about it scientifically, the planet cannot function without animals. It doesn't work that way. If you just take the bees out of the ecosystem, for example, everything would collapse within 2 years. This is a scientific fact. So,
yeah. Well, I know that you just said that you're not keen on using the word spiritual, but I don't know what other word to use. So please forgive me when I ask you or continue with this next question. Having a spiritual relationship with nature is generally an important component of traditional cultures, and many native sages of the past have spoken of the strong connection between the great spirit above and the animals here. For example, the Pawnee saw certain animals as spiritual messengers sent by their god. Horses were seen as godlike mystery beings by the Hidatsa Sioux, while the Oglala Sioux believed that the buffalo was a holy being, a gift from their god. Please talk about the spiritual role that animals have traditionally played and still can play in our lives today.
Yeah, I agree with all those perceptions of animals. The thing, a lot of things are hard to translate because of the English language, and the language, a lot of the Native American languages were so different from English that it's just sometimes they don't have words. Like the words that they use are concepts that we don't have words for those concepts. So that's why, for example, the buffalo being a holy being might sound strange for people, or the horse being a godlike mystery being might sound strange for some people, but in reality, these beings, these are beings that possess qualities that are beyond our own qualities. So if they possess qualities that are beyond our own qualities, then they are as valuable as we are.
Okay, and you had told me at one point that you had a little pet kitten, or you have a kitten.
Yes.
And that he's came to the point to realize, now he's a cat, to realize that this cat is your spiritual ally. What do you mean by that, and how did this realization come about?
Yeah, I can definitely talk about that.
Okay.
I call him my spirit animal ally. So I guess I do use that word a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, well, my dad gave me that kitten. I didn't ask for it for him. And before I had that kitten, I didn't know about animals. I hadn't remember about animals, or the forest, or anything. I was just, I don't even remember what I used to think. But basically, this is a being that is really small compared to me. But it's a being that is sovereign, is smart, is strong, is totally, entirely aware of his surroundings, entirely aware of every nuance, every sound, every emotion that he sees from people, he sees from me. And he's just taught me all these things. And I call him an ally, spirit animal ally, because thanks to him, I've been able to be a better human being. And it's a mutual relationship, because thanks to me, he can glow as a cat because I truly respect him and protect him.
Well, so
he's lucky.
There's a sense of reciprocity.
Yeah,
then.
He's definitely lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm lucky as well.
Yeah, great. Well, please explain to us how animals can serve as special allies to people in general, and what kind of help or lessons can they impart to us?
I think because our world has been separated from nature for the past maybe 500 years, the main lesson would be to teach people about nature. Because most people, including me, we're all totally separated from nature. We forgot about the basics of nature, and we enjoy being indoors more than being outdoors because it's easier to be indoors with all the electricity and heating and all that stuff. The main thing that a spirit animal would teach you would be like grounding to Mother Earth. Or if you don't want to see the planet as a mother, just to the ecosystem, to the planet. If you want to see it however you want to see it. I think it's essential to be aware, if you want to be aware of existence.
Yes, a former guest on this program, author David Grimm, expressed it this way. He saw our pets as bridges back to nature. Yeah. So can you suggest how someone might go about finding his or her personal animal spirit guide?
Well, I think those might be different terms. I actually don't know the answer. I know this animal, this being, was given to me, and I didn't look for him. It just happened to come to me. And I think that that happens to a lot of people with animals, with dogs, cats, which are the main animals that we share our lives with. It could happen with any other animal. And I think it's just a matter of people having their own experiences.
Mm-hmm. And being open to receiving those experiences.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't open when I received the cat. That was 5 years ago. I was a kid. So I wasn't really understanding of anything. I just grew wiser because of his presence.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break now from this conversation so that Ender can play a song he's composed for this program. And Ender, do you just want to say a few words about the song you're going to play or tell us what it's called?
Yeah, this song is called Great Spirit.
Great.
And I've played this song many times. It's like the only song I have. I'm joking.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay.
That was awesome, Ender. Thank you very much. You're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. I'm Dab Stedman, and you just heard Ender Black singing one of his original songs about animals called Great Spirit. We've been discussing the ancient native knowledge surrounding our relationship to animals. Okay, let's continue our conversation now by examining another core concept of ancient native wisdom, which is the sense of kinship with the natural world. Lakota chief Luther Standing Bear carried this idea forward into the 20th century when he reflected that a man accepting the kinship of all creatures and acknowledging unity with the universe of things was infusing into his being the true essence of civilization. Is this idea of universal connectedness the same as what you have called the theory of unified consciousness? And can you please explain to our listeners what you mean by that?
I really like that quote. I've never heard it before. I think I agree with that entirely. I think we have lost a lot of our civilization in general. I mean, we have been able to become great engineers and builders in ways that we have never seen before, at least in our current, in our recorded history. But we did lose that civilization that is what can help us stay on the planet in perfect unison with the planet. And what I mean by the theory of unified consciousness, which some other people call the source field, it's basically, I'm so glad about quantum physics because they are actually starting to figure things out. And basically, before matter comes energy, and before energy comes thought. And this is the thing that mainstream science, which is the science they teach in high school, really, it's just completely wrong. It really is. Thoughts come before energy, and energy comes before matter. So basically, by hurting the animals the way we are hurting the animals, by hurting the ecosystems the way we're hurting the ecosystems, we're hurting ourselves, we're devolving. And I think a lot of people, that go to college, I don't know, they go to like Ivy League universities, they delude themselves. They're completely deluded into thinking that they are like a better version of human. And I'm not saying, I mean, I'm just trying to, I didn't sound too polite, but.
You don't have to be polite.
Definitely the future, like if we could, this is why I like to think, if we ever make contact with a very advanced planet, and a planet that is advanced, that a planet that has grown and that they don't have problems anymore, those people are not going to be separated from nature. They're not going to have a planet that is an entire city. They are going to be in unison with the animals and the ecosystems. And that's what an advanced planet would look like. We're not there. So we're like a third world planet. And in the future, what we're going to have to realize now is that we have to just take into account all the different problems that we have. And we're going to have to tackle them like it's an emergency.
And it is an emergency.
And it is. And I think now we're ready for it, though we weren't before, but now we are. So, yeah.
Okay. Getting back to the ancient wisdoms and teaching, I'd like to touch briefly on the traditional native practices of hunting and fishing, and in the case of the Maka tribe, whaling. It's difficult for animal advocates like me to reconcile the ancient beliefs of respect and reverence for animals with these types of activities which cause animals great pain and death. Can you explain this apparent contradiction?
Yeah, well, I think about this a lot, but the way I see it and the way I've realized that what's happening in the world right now is because of the way we've been treating animals for the past 100 years, because of factory farming, because of all the horrible things that happen. Now we've messed everything up. We've messed with the fields of consciousness. So now it feels different. Now it's not the same. Like eating animals the ancient way, it's a thing of perfection. Like a lot of these tribes that whale, You can look that up. This is a fascinating thing how it happens, but the whales come to the people. They don't go and hunt them. They wade.
Okay, now this comes into exactly what I was going to ask you.
It's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. I mean, the cougar is not an evil creature because he needs to hunt deer. They have this beautiful relationship. And I know death looks ugly, but when it comes to the animals, it's okay. It's a thing of how the ecosystems work together. Yeah.
Okay, this plays in beautifully with my next point, that more than 100 years ago, Big Thunder of the Algonquin Nation said something that puzzles me when he stated, "When we go hunting, it is not the arrow that kills the moose. It is nature that kills him." Is this along the same lines of thinking of what you were just talking about?
Yeah, definitely, mm-hmm. definitely. You see, there are many things about Native American history and Native American culture that are just not present in any book because of translations that weren't done right and because there was this oral tradition that things weren't written down. But a lot of I know this stuff, not like I experienced it in this lifetime, but I just know that in the ancient times, and this is not only North America, but in Europe and Asia, when they went hunting for a big creature like buffalo or a bison, it would be, you know, like 5,000 of these animals, and then they would be chasing, and then suddenly one or two would literally get out of the herd
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to be caught
mm-hmm.
because that's just the reciprocity. Yeah, it's just the way that it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We're nearing the end of our conversation, but I do want to ask you a few more things. Another aspect of the ancient knowledge involves seeing the passage of time as occurring in cycles. Would you discuss your prediction that we are now entering a new cycle in our history, and tell us why this one is so very crucial to the future?
Well, it's a time of renewal. It's a time of beginning from where we were when we started in the first place, and this is a galactic cycle. It's beyond our control. It's beyond whatever we do. It has to do with the way galaxies work, and it's just the way galaxies are set up. And these cycles are about learning from disaster. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Okay. And very last question, does either ancient or current Native wisdom offer any guidance in restoring our rightful relationship with the animals and with the whole natural world?
Well, in the near future, it's going to be crucial here in America and that's going to be a great event, really. But it's going to be crucial that Native American knowledge becomes a part of the government process. And that's going to be, I know it sounds amazing right now because we have people like Donald Trump and all these people, you know, that are, in my opinion, just not apt to lead. And yet they are running for president. And then again, executive branch really doesn't, you know, it's too complicated. It doesn't really do anything. It's like a figurehead position. In the near future, yes, it's going to be a matter of life or death. But basically, the wisdom of the Native Europeans, the wisdom of building, organizing, of civilization, technology, and the wisdom of existence in concordance with the natural laws, both of them are going to save the planet. And I think it's going to be a beautiful thing, but it will be an acknowledgement of the wisdom of every racial group, because otherwise
taking the best from all.
Otherwise, yeah. Humanity would just decay into oblivion within 100 years.
Okay.
It really will.
Our time is nearly up now, and it's always good to end on an upbeat note. Okay, Ender, just to sum everything up, one last question for you. Are you personally optimistic about the future?
Oh, yeah, totally. 100%.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much, Ender Black, for sharing your music and your thoughts about animals and ancient knowledge with us today. This is Dab Stedman with Voices for the Animals, thanking you for listening to your community radio. To hear this program or podcast from past programs, please check the station's website at kboo.fm. And please plan to tune in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
Now the KBOO News at noon for Monday, November 23, 2015. In local news, a black male student at the Lewis and Clark College was assaulted on Friday night by three white males shouting racial slurs. The attack comes just 2 days after Lewis and Clark students held a walkout and protest after racial slurs were used on a popular campus social media site. The racial slurs were posted on the campus Yik Yak social platform just days after the college held the 12th annual Ray Warren Symposium on Race and Ethnic Studies. Ray Warren was a baseball star at Lewis and Clark in the 60s and returned in 1987 to serve as Associate Dean of Admissions, Associate Dean of Students, and Director of the Ethnic Student Services. Warren was also a leader in organizing the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations held annually on the campus. The Portland police had investigated the racial slurs and determined that the online threats weren't specific enough to rise to the level of a hate crime. The attack on Friday night is now under investigation by the Portland Police Bureau's Bias Crimes Unit, who are saying it's too early to know if the racial slurs and the assault were related. The world's largest animal, the blue whale, washed up near Gold Beach on the Oregon coast earlier this month. It is the first time known to scientists that the endangered whale has washed up on an Oregon beach in at least 100 years. The whale measured 78 feet long and weighed almost 50 tons, less than half of the weight of a healthy